The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Thanks for being with us. So, I have to go through an admission here on the air about what a dope I was yesterday morning in Kingman. And Eric's drive back. Jared, he's not ready yet, right? So don't go to Eric yet. That's fine. He was having something with his headset. We'll have Bob Young with us here in a little bit because I need some sanity on today's show. Friday night, I am sitting in Mandalay Bay and just enjoying myself. And all of a sudden, my phone starts going off on, can you believe what the Suns are doing? So Friday night, and look, it's the Suns trying to complete a deal with two teams, and nobody can figure out if it's Foster Brooks or Brooks. Brooks Thompson was a good Brooks. Whoever Brooks and Dunn, whoever Brooks was coming in a deal. I took a shirt with me to wear to work out in Vegas, and it was like 2013 Suns long sleeve. They give this out to you, and it says all in on it. And I was going to wear it over to the T-Mobile Arena and stand there and have my wife take a picture of me saying, dropping in to get Suns tickets for their game against so-and-so tomorrow night here in Vegas and, you know, be a smartass and all that. And I didn't do it. The stuff that was happening Friday night was very funny. So I need to have Bob Young on today's show because here's the thing in our marketplace. Paul Coro is no longer at the Arizona Republic. He is at Grand Canyon University. Bob Young is no longer at the Arizona Republic. He is at the Athletic. When I need people that can give me context, I'm not being critical of anybody here. It's just a plain fact that can give me more than a year's worth of, boy, the Suns really are this or that. Any show can do that. Any show can apologize for what's gone on downtown. I certainly do not do that. My intention here is just to look at things and just say, par for the course. Of course the Suns are in a week where Robert never said anything about moving the team or even threatened to move the team. Of course the Suns didn't do anything wrong in this three-way deal with Memphis and Washington that ended up being a Washington deal today. Of course we're just supposed to sit here and say everything is going well. You know what's going well? Is the idea of having Zion Williamson alongside DeAndre Ayton next year. That's all that's going well. Watch Duke and you'll see the next first overall pick for the Suns. That's at least how I see it. So I have Bob on with us. We'll talk a little bit about Vegas Bowl, my stupid story in a second, and Kingman. I listened to the Cardinals game, then I watched it back on DVR when I got home. I'm just into that sort of punishment. Really, the interesting story of the weekend was what the Suns tried to do. And this week we have Kansas, the number one team overall in college basketball, that is going to be here in our backyard on Saturday night, regardless of what ASU does tonight against Vanderbilt. Bobby Hurley coaching against Kansas, a team that ASU beat a year ago at Allen Fieldhouse. The game is this Saturday night. They've never beaten a number one ranked team. A number one overall ranked team has never lost at ASU. I had a friend last night. He's got four seats that are just to the right of the, what would that be, the west-facing basket. And I said, are you going to sell your tickets? And he said, I could probably get $1,000 apiece for each ticket. Now, remember, this is ASU basketball we're talking about. $4,000, which would pay for his season seats. He's not going to sell them. I don't think he is, at least. But there's going to be demand, and there's going to be electricity in the air. Kansas is going to start a player from Gilbert Christian, Mitch Lightfoot, a player that we've done stories on through the years. When people say, why do you do so much on high school? Because they turn into college and then pro. It's really not that hard. So I'm very much looking forward to that. In terms of my dopey story in Vegas, it was actually in Kingman yesterday. So Eric, you got caught in the accident in Kingman yesterday, is that right?
Got caught around the accident.
So people were killed in this accident, if I read correctly.
I didn't hear the details. I just know that we were driving back, and luckily we had the GPS going, and the GPS said, hey, go off to the right here and drive through the desert for 35 to 45 minutes. It's going to save you like 2 hours.
So you went through Bullhead City?
Not quite, but we were just in the most desolate area.
Searchlight?
Yeah, I don't even really know where it was, but yeah. I'm not really familiar with the greater Kingman area since I've never been there outside of the In-N-Out and maybe a couple gas stations.
So my wife and I left very early yesterday morning, and it's much easier to drive. You fly to Vegas, you got to go to the airport early, you have to sit there, you have to hope that the plane is on time. You have people coughing, sneezing, hacking on you. I'm jammed into a corner. It's much easier just to make the drive. It's a very simple drive. Now the dam is, you know,
yeah, the Tillman Bridge. It makes life much easier for all of us traveling
so
to and
easy.
From Vegas.
It was from here at the studio Thursday, 4 hours, just over 4 hours, and I'm at the Four Seasons, and everything's good.
Oh, rough.
I know.
Four Seasons, man.
It was a good deal. So, and it wasn't on the company, so I'll just be clear. We leave yesterday morning early, and we go to Kingman, and my wife is one of those. She goes on Yelp. How many of you guys, your wives, do the Yelp thing? A lot of you probably do. Do you do Yelp, Eric?
Of course.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So I said to her, let's get some coffee and get on the road. We get on the road. It's like 6 a.m., 7 a.m. here. We lose an hour. I'd like to be sitting in my office watching the Cardinal game for some ungodly reason. I had that on my radar yesterday. We get to Kingman, and we're both kind of sort of asleep. We walk into this restaurant that had 5 stars. It's called Grandpa's Kitchen or something. And it's off the beaten path, like 3 miles to the north off of I-40.
Off of Andy Levine Road or whatever
Yes.
That's the only road that I remember.
Off Bank. I remember Bank because there's a reason why.
Something like that.
The bank had.
I don't even know if it's Andy Levine Road, but it's something like that.
So
that's the main drag.
So Chris is like, my wife is, this would be great. So we pull up, we walk in, and we're just kind of sort of half asleep. There's a little thrift store that's open on a Sunday morning in Kingman that everybody's picking through stuff. It's fine. We walk in, plastic tables, plastic chairs. When you have people that wait on you and they call you honey, that's good. It's always good. Or hun. Hey, hun, how's it going? Well, I'm really tired. So we order. Food's great. I pull out my trusty debit card to pay for it, and she says, we don't take plastic.
Oh, one of those places, huh?
So I didn't know these places still existed.
A true greasy spoon.
Yes. And so we're rummaging through, and she said, well, you could always wash dishes. And, you know, Chris and I are just like, oh, we're so tired. And so we're rummaging through, and it wasn't a big number, but we just didn't have any cash left with us because we just had our cards. Not credit cards, debit cards. There's money there, just to be clear. So, of course, dopey me says, I didn't know this. She said, well, it's on the front door. I walk out, and sure enough, it says no credit cards. Well, see, credit and debit are two different things, okay? So I said to her, it says credit. This is a debit. We don't take plastic. Well, then put plastic on there. Do the 60-minute story last night about plastic is ruining our world, okay? It's fine. So here I am. Chris is sitting there at the table. I have to leave her and go find a bank. I have to go find a bank in Kingman just to pay for a very small amount for a breakfast. And it took us a while to get out of there. And, of course, there's truck traffic coming back. But all in all, if that was the worst thing that happened, like the game for ASU, I'll get into that in a minute. Our opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And I bring this up very truthfully, straightforward to you. Think about what matters most to you. And if it's protected, then great. If you have enough life insurance, if you thought about things that are going to come up as your kids get older, if today, God forbid, something happened to you, would everything be handled the way that you would want it to be handled? About annuities, college planning, so on and so forth. There's a lot to get to, and the people at Sagicor are terrific. Log on to Sagicor. Now you can do it for the privacy of your own home, right? Sagicor, protect what matters most. On the other side, we'll talk about this is a big week for Arizona State football, and was it truly a successful season for ASU football, finishing at 7-6? The Todd Graham defenders are out in force. I threw Mike McCarthy's name out yesterday for the Cardinals head coaching job, and I'm getting crushed today, which is fine. I'll lay into this a little bit, too. Then Bob Young from the Heat Index at The Athletic. He will be with us about 10:35 and much more as we roll on a Monday. Stay with us. All right, so let's get into ASU, and I'm going to get into the Cardinals too in this segment. Sun Devils end up losing in the Las Vegas Bowl. Their offense was not good at all in the second half. That's the only way to put it. It was one of the few times they'd laid an egg, and then you look at it and say, look, Nikhil wasn't out there. Their offensive line wasn't really together. Fresno State's really good against the run, but it's Fresno State, some people would say. I would say I would actually like to see Fresno State and ASU play each other every year in one of those late August, early September games. I think that would be a really smart match. Friday, I went to the press conference with the two coaches, and Herm and Jeff Tedford really do like each other. At least they did a comedy bit for, I don't know, a good 25, 30 minutes. It was very entertaining. It was fun. The game itself, it felt like an exhibition to me. Some bowl games are that way. When you have players that don't play, in Nikhil's case, and I totally agree with his decision, those of you that are, I don't know, if you just drop in occasionally to watch games, not picking on you, just get used to this. This is the norm. This is a business decision. And there will be players here in the postseason of college football that will play in games and get hurt. And they'll have to rehab and get all ready for the combine. From a business decision standpoint, the way Herm laid it out, he had been in discussions with Nikhil about this throughout the season, and that's very smart. If I am a recruit, letter of intent day is this Wednesday, and I am a five-star quarterback who has the world in front of him and reportedly is a NFL-type guy, and yes, you can tell at this stage with certain players, barring injury, I have to look at, is the coach and the group that I'm going to trying to get me to the next level? It's no different of you going to the business school, wanting to go into business. And if somebody comes along and they say, hey, we want you now, you have to go to your professor. And your professor may say, well, you need that piece of paper. You should stick it out. Or no, you should go take it. I know in broadcast, I've said this to people. I've never once been asked about my degree. I've never been asked once about a piece of paper. All that is asked is the demo tape. That's it. And in the NFL, that's how it's going to work. And the average lifespan of an NFL player on the field is just over 2 years. Just over 2 years. A lot of these guys get in, they get out. So I have to take Nikhil not being on the field as part of the offensive struggles. Did Herm Edwards have a successful first season? Contextually, to me, you look at just what did he inherit? Where did he come from? What was it that he did? He inherited a program that, from a coaching standpoint, Herm did not burn timeouts on his defense in the first and second and third quarters over and over and over as the previous regime did. The previous regime liked to have people on the PR side point out they were some of the least penalized teams in the country. Yet, from a football IQ standpoint, I didn't think they were very smart. Herm's team, there's very seldom that I saw them and said, wow, what are they thinking? What are they thinking? I talked to Dr. Michael Crow in the end zone before the game started. ASU's president. He's going to be on the TV show this week. We did a deep dive. And he was talking about the checkmate that Herm put Michigan State into early on in the season. You could just see it happening. I saw that several times. A play here, a play there. This is not a bad team, a play here, a play there, in my humble opinion. So 7-6 just feels much different than 7-6 under Todd Graham going to the Vegas Bowl, or Dennis Erickson, or Dirk Cutter, any of these guys. I'm actually very optimistic, and I think the fan base is very optimistic. I haven't heard much about, man, the Vegas Bowl. What I've heard is it'll be great to see new blood at quarterback. Not dissing on Manny Wilkins, just a fact. I think having an upgrade at quarterback rather than senior leadership at quarterback and a different dimension at quarterback will be very healthy for this program. In fact, a quarterback that's going to come in and just turn around and hand the football off to Eno Benjamin, I think is very positive for this program. Eric, because you went as a fan, I got Eric these seats for this tent. Everything was taken care of.
Everything was great, and we barely sat in it.
Barely sat in it because, I'll give you my thing. There were no TVs.
No.
There's only one scoreboard at this dumpy high school stadium that they played at, Sam Boyd.
Correct, which you couldn't see if
you
were in the suite.
Which you couldn't see if you were in the suite. So I actually went out of the suite and sat there and looked up at the scoreboard for many parts of the game.
It was a situation where that was definitely a fire hazard. There were far too many people in that tent.
Yes.
And it was hot. I'm not complaining. I'm just stating facts.
Your facts.
And
facts.
It was a situation, Brad, where
claustrophobia?
A little bit, and just a lot of just noise. I mean, people, we get a lot of people that had no interest in watching the game, and that's fine. Yeah. It was a corporate suite. I get it. There are people like that. And so my friend and I just went up and found seats on the ASU side and, like, really enjoyed the game. And I think another thing that should be noted is Merlin Robertson did not play for ASU, and that was a correct. Huge loss for them defensively. But I thought the game followed script, as most ASU games have done this year. They were never really out of the game, but in a sense, I never really thought ASU was in the game. When you only score 3 points in the second half, that's yeah. usually a recipe for disaster.
Manny's pick six. Terrible.
Not good. No, not good.
Merlin Robertson, unfortunately, and it's personal stuff.
Yep.
I don't know if he's ever going to play again at ASU.
Mm.
I don't know that. I'm not going to be one of those guys that say, can he repeat what he did this last year? I think that there's just a lot going on there. And he's very talented. And maybe everything gets together. He's got a baby.
Yep.
So as a freshman, that's a lot on a plate. So that's going to be a tough one. Is it a successful season being 7-6 for Herm Edwards from your view? 6 losses.
I think so. I think it is, because I think he has established a pretty apparent and direct blueprint of where he wants the program to go. And there's always going to be some sort of turnover and change, because a lot of the guys that he's coaching, he didn't recruit.
Right.
Some he did, but right. not all of them. So it takes a couple years to sort of flush that all out. I was a little disappointed that ASU did not have more fans there. It just didn't seem... I mean, like, you saw the Fresno State section.
Went, it's Fresno. There's went, nothing to do in Fresno.
I understand that, but went,
raisins.
But went goal line to goal line yeah. and then twisted halfway into the end zone. And the ASU fan base was, like, from the 20 to the 20. And it was a lot easier trip to just drive the 4 hours or get on the 45-minute flight to make it up there. But, I mean, you know, beggars can't be choosers. It's not a bad bowl game. It's just a bad stadium.
And
sometimes a bad stadium can kind of make a bad bowl game.
It's an improved bowl game other than the stadium. Like,
yep.
they were doing some things that the people down here that think they've got it all figured out with the bowl games down here, you guys don't. I mean, Vegas is putting some money into this. That's an ESPN-owned bowl game, which means they don't put any money into it. They just stick a logo and away you go, from my understanding. But there was dollars being thrown in there. Fans had a great time. Media was handled much more professionally than the last time we were up there, where you and I just walk up and they're like, oh, yeah, grab a cred. And we pulled up to the parking lot. We walked in the stadium. There was no security. There was no nothing the last time. This time it was kind of like that, but not as bad.
Well, and when you have Reese Davis and Kirk Herbstreit calling the game, I mean, there has to be that adds some value to it on a
correct.
National level.
Correct. Correct. And I felt like...
And Laura Rutledge doing sidelines. So yeah, they had their A-team.
And Laura was part of the kickoff lunch. The kickoff lunch was at the Hard Rock in their main ballroom, and
nice.
Both bands were there. Oh, there was some money being thrown at this event. All the audiovisual. I mean, it was something where fans just are like wins, losses. I look at it like, you kidding me? Go to Sun Bowl or go to this? It's not even close.
And I'm going to guess that ASU is probably going to try to keep getting kids from Vegas, especially since... You know, Bishop Gorman is where ASU practiced, and
yeah.
that is a destination for many college coaches to find potential players.
Okay, so Wednesday, I'm looking forward to this Wednesday. I am looking forward to this letter of intent day. There's some people that don't like recruiting. There's some people that just don't want to get their arms around 18-year-olds and say this is the future of the program. You know, I've looked at what Kevin Sumlin is doing, and I've looked at what Herm is doing. Kevin seems like he's going to Texas quite a bit. He took another kicker last night. He's got 2 kickers in this class. It's a little random to me. Again, I didn't go to ASU and I didn't go to U of A. I don't pick sides here. But I look at having a 5-star quarterback come to Arizona State under Herm Edwards. It feels different to me. It feels like this is really a breakthrough at that position. There's a local player. You know Pola Gates' story over at Williamsfield, right, Eric? I mean, that's... He's really good, right?
He's really good.
So from my understanding, this is the only player left in the state that they are really on for this year's class. And he's supposed to, and Jordan may know this, I'm sure you do too, but he's supposed to announce at a bowl game in a couple weeks, but he's going to let the school know Wednesday, and they're going to sit on it.
Yeah, he has all the big dogs after him. Like when Saban came out a couple weeks
ago. When Alabama flew into town, yeah.
He was there, and Nebraska sent their entire coaching staff to visit him, along with Ty Robinson.
So I saw him play once against Castile, against Zach Nelson, and Zach Nelson had a good night against him, but you could tell that kid's ferocious.
Yep. Yep, he's a really good player.
Yeah.
So, he has those good genes, if you know what I mean. If you can connect the pola and think NFL Hall of Fame safety, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. So. No. So they're in on a kid here in our own backyard off of, what is that? Was that like Higley and Williamsfield Road at Williamsfield High School with Steve Campbell, the former Sun Devil, who's the coach over there. So it could be very interesting on Wednesday. We're going to have a lot of recruiting stuff on the TV show this week. We'll have a lot of recruiting stuff here on the website. For now, though, we'll switch gears. I didn't get to the Cardinals. I'm not surprised I didn't get to the Cardinals. I'll get to them after Bob Young because I'm very interested in Bob Young's view of Dylan Brooks, Marshawn Brooks, Foster Brooks, Brooks and Dunn, Brooks Thompson, all the Brookses, and the Suns and their deal that didn't go down, that did, and all that. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now, as promised, Bob Young is with us. Always great to see Bob Young in person and on the other end of the phone to hear his voice. The Athletic AZ, Suns contributor, the Heat Index, the original only Heat Index, by the way, longtime Suns insider. How are you? Thanks for coming on board.
I'm doing great. How are you doing? Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Yeah, you too. I am I'm sitting in Vegas in the Mandalay Bay Sportsbook getting ready for Saturday's ASU football game. My phone starts beeping. Can you believe the Suns? The Suns are screwing up again. The Suns are doing this. The Suns are doing that. And I thought, Bob, while I was in Vegas, I'd go down to the T-Mobile Arena, have my wife take a picture of me saying I'm in line for Suns tickets for their next home game, and I didn't do it. And so this deal with Friday night, it happened late for many, many, many fans. They have no idea what we're talking about. But in essence, walk us through what happened Friday night in a deal that didn't happen.
Well, first of all, let me preface it by saying that when it was all coming down on Friday night, it was blown up on social media. I was at a movie. And so I came out and I saw the initial, kind of thread of tweets, and it took me a while to get my head around exactly what was going on. It was crazy, but essentially what happened is the Suns had been involved for about a week in talks with Memphis about obtaining Dylan Brooks. That didn't appear to be going anywhere, and then late in the week, they heard from Washington, and Washington was trying to find out what it would take to get Trevor Ariza. And when they found out that the Suns told them that they had been talking to Memphis about Dylan Brooks, Washington tried to broker a deal that would bring them Ariza and send Dylan Brooks to the Suns. Somewhere it was lost in translation, and Memphis claims that they believe the Suns wanted Marshawn Dylan in the Washington deal, despite having talked with them only about Dylan Brooks for a week. So whether Memphis messed it up or got cold feet, or Washington misinterpreted which Brooks the Suns were talking about, or the Suns simply failed to do their diligence and make sure that they talked to Memphis in the three-way deal as well, instead of just depending on Washington. You could point a finger in any of the three directions and probably be correct. So it turned out to be kind of a fiasco and a little bit of a comedy. And then the Suns and Washington eventually just left Memphis out of it and worked out a deal for Ariza that brings back Kelly Oubre and Austin Rivers. So that's kind of where it's at. And again, like I said, you can kind of pick any of the three parties and point a finger, and there's certainly guilt to be shared by all of them.
Two players with the same last name of Brooks. Somewhere right. It just didn't come down to, we want Brooks in the deal. Okay, Brooks is in the deal. Okay, which Brooks?
Right.
Nobody got to the which Brooks, or Memphis felt like, well, we had already said it was this Brooks, or the Suns said, no, we wanted this Brooks. We don't know. But let me go back on this for a second.
Sure. Sure.
If Dylan Brooks comes to the Suns, what does that tell you that they wanted out of Dylan Brooks to the Suns? What were the Suns looking at in Dylan Brooks if it were him?
Well, I think that they, you know, obviously they have plenty of wings. So they may have had, and I don't know this, I'm just speculating,
sure,
but they may have had other deals in mind involving other wing players that would follow that deal. I think they were looking at, their perimeter defense has been much better lately, but that certainly wasn't the case earlier. And I think they're still looking for young players, but I think they're also trying to find that established point guard. And I think probably they would have been looking at a deal down the road, either immediately or down the road, to flip some of those other assets into that player.
Okay, so if it's Marshawn,
into a point guard.
Into a point guard. So the same, if it's Marshawn Brooks, I guess what I'm trying to do is...
They had no interest in Marshawn, and okay, you know, that to me, that's the thing that, you know, if you're looking at it from the Suns' perspective, there's no reason in the world that Memphis should have thought they were trying to make a deal for Marshawn, because they had already been talking off and on for a week about Dylan Brooks. And then Washington comes in and says, how can we make this work? Well, if Memphis knows that that their interest is in Dylan Brooks, there's no reason for them to think it's Marshawn.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they apparently never discussed Marshawn Dylan. And just my own speculation, but I think that it probably came to light when they got to the point, you know, that there were reports that they exchanged, the Suns had even exchanged medical information on Dylan Brooks. I don't think there was ever any exchange, but I think there was a request made. At some point, the Suns, you know, since they were going through Washington, at some point they did tell them, we need his medical information. And my guess is, and again, it's a guess, that it was probably at that point when they realized, well, wait a minute, you know, there's nothing wrong with Marshawn Dylan, and it's
Marshawn Brooks.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Marshawn. See how easy that happened?
Yeah.
Marshawn.
See?
There's nothing wrong with him. Dylan Brooks. That has the knee issue that needs to be checked out. So, I'm guessing that was probably at the point. Well, why do you want? You know, why do you need his medical information if it's this player? And that's probably, you know, because they were just getting ready to arrange the trade call with the league. When they figured out there was a mistake.
Talking with Bob Young, The Athletic AZ. You got to check out The Athletic. If you've not, it's a great Christmas gift. How's that? The Athletic AZ, Suns contributor.
There you go.
Can check in.
Yeah, they got discounts too, I think, for Christmas.
There you go.
Holiday special. Yeah.
So Robert didn't get any blame for this, nor should he have, but it's pretty easy for any fan saying, you know, they're busy doing their lives, like, we heard the Suns screwed up and there's the wrong player coming here, because I've gotten some of that.
Yeah.
Robert shouldn't
be
held on this. Now that Trevor Ariza is gone, Kelly Oubre comes in. He's kind of intriguing to me, Bob. I mean, he's a guy that has some upside, in my opinion. He's a restricted free agent, so they can decide if they want to gamble on him in the future or get rid of him. Austin Rivers, I don't know. I'm just one of those that thinks Doc probably knew that his son was unhappy and put the word out around the league, and you're looking for a guard. I think we can make something happen, indirectly, obviously. What do you make out of this deal? What do you make out of what the Suns are getting?
Yeah, and Rivers is a free agent this summer also.
Yep.
So, you know, I think it ended up being a better deal for the Suns than what they were trying to get with Memphis, to be honest with you. And they didn't give up any, you know, draft picks, not even a second-round pick or, you know, future second-round pick. They didn't give up anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was pretty obvious that Trevor Ariza wanted out of here, so they, you know, they made him happy and kind of eliminated that issue. I think it's a kind of deal where you've got the rest of the season to kind of see how these guys fit. It would have been nice if they could have got a point guard, and I think that's still something that they have to address. Rivers is more of a combo. He can certainly play some point guard. And that's not necessarily a bad thing in the way they play. You know, to have a guy that can, you know, be a playmaker or an off guard type guy. I think in a reserve role, I hope they keep starting DeAnthony Melton myself, because I think he's so solid on defense. He's still pretty raw, but they have played really well defensively, at least in the, you know, the a short stretch going back since he entered this starting lineup. So, I don't think it's a terrible deal. I don't know that they really accomplish what they need most, though, which is to get a playmaking guard.
Okay, so I've always have respected your opinion, because you've been there in the great times, you've seen the bad times, too. And where we are now, to me, feels like some of the worst, darkest days, where people just flat don't care, don't show up. I don't know. You see at The Athletic what they read and what they don't read. I see what people look at on our stuff. It feels like we're in the lowest of lowest with Robert and the city. And if they get an arena or don't, it feels like on the court, Zion Williamson, at some point, you just have to say, play like you did last year for DeAndre Ayton. Can you put a bow on where everything is right now? I know it's not a pretty bow, but can you put a bow on where everything is right now?
I think you just wad the wrapping up and and save the bow. You know, it is one of the low points. It has to be. And I think one of the reasons, earlier you're saying Robert, you can't really put blame on Robert on this trade situation. And I would say the one place you could is that, you know, there's been such dysfunction in the organization, and, you know, there's not really, you don't have real experience in those positions where, you know, in the basketball operation. That's how come, you know, miscommunication happens when you have people that aren't that experienced. That's not to say that happened, but, you know, you've got to, you know, at least people have confidence that, you know, you're doing the right things if you have experienced people there. It's when you don't, people just make the assumption, whether it's right or it's wrong, that, oh, well, you know, you have people that don't know what they're doing over there. Well, you know, I don't know. I don't know that that's what happened, but it will eventually lead back to Robert Sarver, because he's the owner, and that's kind of been, you know, that's kind of been the pattern over, certainly over the last 8 years or so. So, couldn't happen at a worse time with them trying to, you know, work a deal with the city for, you know, an arena upgrade, which, you know, I've written this. They need that. The city needs to upgrade. It's the city's facility. They own it. There was the reports about, you know, Sarver moving the team. Well, I can tell you that Sarver may not have to move the team. It may not be his call. I've always felt that the NBA would, you know, the Board of Governors would balk at moving Jerry Colangelo's baby out of Phoenix, but I've heard from other people in the meantime that, you know, Adam Silver really is intrigued by Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And the way the contract is written with the Suns and the city on that arena is that if it's judged to be obsolete, which would be the NBA's decision, the NBA would evaluate it at the end of the, you know, in two more years, I think it is, or 2022, whenever that is, they will evaluate the arena, and if they decide that it's obsolete, they can make the team move. And that might even include a change of ownership. And you know, it could be completely out of Robert Sarver's hands at that point if the league decides to step in. So there's a lot at stake there, and I'm not sure it's completely in the control of the Phoenix Suns.
Really interesting. And your view on this, put all that to the side, your view on this, is Robert in the right? Should Robert up the number? When I hear about how the Suns are paying for a practice facility, I can just say that doesn't resonate with any fans around the team. They don't care. So stop saying it. Just stop saying how great we are for paying for a practice facility.
Right.
There's been missteps all over the place.
Yeah, and I think that they're position is that they had already negotiated a deal, and in fairness to the Suns, I think the secrecy part of it, a lot of that has been on the part of the city. You know, the Suns have been trying to negotiate with the city. It's kind of the city that's kept it under the radar. And, you know, that's even a criticism that we've heard from city council people, you know, that that the city staff hasn't been willing to provide, you know, information that they want in the decision-making process. So that's kind of a problem in all of this. And certainly, you know, again, the Suns are an easy target because they've been bad for 8 years, basically, most of 8 years. So, you know, it's pretty easy. And they're not, you know, they're not doing anything this year to improve that position. And after telling people this is, you know, this is the time to start winning and we're going to turn the corner. You know, we've got DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker, and here we go. And then they fall on their face.
Yeah, there's no Rick Welts to save Robert either.
No.
That's
no.
Like the front end of all this is there's nobody leading the charge. So
right, and I think, you know, I'm certainly not the only one that has expressed this sentiment, but, you know, I wrote recently that the guy that, you know, that's out there that's not only a great story but a great decision would be to hire David Griffin back here. You know, he's a guy that has history. He knows Robert Sarver and what he's up against in dealing with him. You know, and he's got a track record. He took the Cavaliers to, you know, he put together a championship team in Cleveland. So I don't know. The guy's out there. It just seems like a no-brainer to me. But
you and I together. No-brainers. Yeah. You and I together. Yeah. And you know, but here's the thing. You hire Griff, and Robert's got to disappear. Robert doesn't know how to disappear. That's the problem.
Yeah, and I think that's probably true. And you know, the wrench in the whole machine would be that, you know, Robert would somehow have to convince Griff that that he would get out of the way. And yes. I'm not sure that that's possible. You know, he would have to almost, you know, he would have to convince Griff rather than the other way around. And I'm not sure that you know, again, Griff has worked there. He knows Robert, and you know, I'm not sure he could be convinced that that would work. But if I were Robert Sarver, I'd sure be trying.
He's got to do something. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time. Good stuff over at The Athletic. I'm happy to see you write. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks. Have a good one.
You got it. There's Bob Young with us. The Athletic AZ. You can log on over there, and it's great content. The good people at The Athletic. All right. I'm going to do a little bit on the Cardinals coach after this timeout. Stay with us. Okay, before we get out of here, so the Cardinals get drilled yesterday, and I mean drilled, and it looked to me, and I heard Dave Pasch and Ron Wolfley talk about this on the radio broadcast when I watched the tape back, because they brought it up. The team looked like they didn't play hard for the coach late. It looked like the team just kind of rolled over. You know, when you lead 7-0 and you come out and you play well with David Johnson and you make some things happen, you get outscored 40-0 and Josh Rosen is getting thrown all over the field. I've already written this, I already said this last week. There's no reason to play Josh Rosen anymore. None. It's the Rams. Even though, you know, the Rams last night, I'm watching them, they're getting ready for the playoffs. Todd Gurley's getting healthy. It's some of these games late in the year, it's like, oh my gosh, can you believe? Like the Steelers-Patriots game was truly great football yesterday. It really was to me. Rams last night, it's like, eh. We got, you know, we got playoffs down the road. Nobody's going to remember a Sunday night game against Philadelphia. Unfortunately, that's where the league is in some ways. Mike McCarthy, to me, would be a good name to consider. I didn't say hire. He'd be a good name to consider. There's some good coaches, veteran coaches, that are out there. I saw Dirk Cutter's name floating around. Exactly what has Dirk done with Jameis Winston? You'll say, well, look what he's done with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I'll say, I don't know what he's done with a young quarterback. I don't. I'm just looking at his previous body of work. Did Aaron Rodgers look great yesterday? For those of you that are Packer fans that say Mike McCarthy screwed up Aaron Rodgers has looked very average. Okay, he was and is a great quarterback. I'd take him here over Josh Rosen. Who wouldn't? But he's not having a great season. And it's hard to see Josh Rosen try to go out there with, what is it, 6 starters on offense or rookies yesterday? Like, why put him out there anymore? There's zero reason. And we've talked about this in the last month or so. And just to reiterate, for those of you that are just catching us first time, look, I've seen enough out of Josh Rosen. he doesn't need to get an ACL this or shoulder or anything this time of the year, where mini camp's out of the way and all that stuff. It doesn't matter if they go 3-13. It doesn't. It only helps them in the draft. So I know that there's guys out there busting their butts and they're getting paid and all of that, but this is business. Like Larry Fitzgerald was playing his ass off late yesterday in a game that was a complete blowout. And that's why he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't know if this Sunday is going to be Larry Fitzgerald's final home game. I don't know that. That is going to be a big narrative this week. The last couple of years, it's been a big narrative. Eric, you're going to the game this week, right?
I am.
Is this Larry Fitzgerald's final home game this time around?
Has to be, right? Has to be.
You think?
Yeah.
No question? He does these one-year deals. He's having a great season.
I shouldn't say no question, but man, like, assuming the Cardinals finish 3-13, which is a pretty safe assumption, I'd say.
It's the Rams at home and the Seahawks in Seattle.
Although they do play well in Seattle, this team is probably not going to play well in Seattle. But who knows? I mean, like, Fitz has so much stuff going on away from football. Eventually, that will pull him away from the game. I just don't know when.
Do you think he'll say anything after the game Sunday? I don't.
No.
I don't.
No, it's not his style.
No, because it's about team.
And he's not going to hold a press conference when he retires.
Jim Trotter will have the story
Correct.
First. It'll be he'll do Jim like Trotter on Twitter. Larry Fitzgerald retires.
Or he'll do like a player's tribute thing or something like that.
Yes.
So, because that's the way Fitz operates, and that's I respect
it's fine.
That.
It's fine.
Totally.
It's fine. Do you have a front runner for Steve Wilks, or do you think Steve Wilks is back?
I mean, Mike McCarthy, that's a pretty interesting name. I kind of go back and forth with Wilks. I don't mean to be on the fence, but I kind of am on the fence because this team has not been healthy all year, and they're throwing this rookie quarterback into the fire. Who knows how much he's going to play the next 2 weeks? I personally think he should get as many reps as he can.
You keep playing him?
I would.
Are you kidding me? It's Ndamukong Suh.
It doesn't matter.
What's he going to get out of this? He doesn't have Christian Kirk. It doesn't matter.
He needs the reps.
We disagree.
That's fine. It's okay.
But so you're thinking, see, my thought is they hired Steve Wilks to coach Sam Bradford and Mike McCoy was brought in.
Yeah, those didn't turn out so
well. No. So it's a completely different team now. You've got to have an offensive-minded coach. Like if they hired Lincoln Riley to come in here and try out for the hot shot college guy, you know what? You'd have to say that's a pretty good move for Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
Sticking with Steve Wilks as the head coach is not a great move for Josh Rosen, in my opinion. Because the defense, it's not like the defense has been great. What happened against the Chargers? What happened yesterday?
The defense has not been great.
I mean, Atlanta's one of the media, they're not the worst. They're one of the middle-of-the-road offenses. Yeah, I know they've got Sanu and Julio Jones and Ridley. I get it. But they can't run the ball.
No.
And they put 40 on them.
I think not only if you're going to overhaul the coaching staff, I mean, the roster, there are guys that just need to go. Like Mike Iupati, that was fine. Goodbye. Robert Condici, I don't think it's working. Goodbye. Like, you need to just clean house and start over. And it can happen. I mean, in the NFL, you can go from being really bad to being really
good. Look at Cleveland.
Exactly.
Look at Cleveland. Who thought?
And they got a new coach, and all of a sudden, the quarterback likes the coach, and they have a young quarterback. And
yeah, it's pretty good.
We'll see.
All right. Before we get out of here, big week ahead. So Letter of Intent Day is on Wednesday. There's going to be a lot of content on the site. The guys were shooting audibles this morning. There's going to be commitments. There's going to be stuff that we're going to cram down your throats to check out. And it's free. Okay? Wednesday, Letter of Intent Day. A lot of content. The TV show this week on Fox Sports Arizona airs 16 times. A lot of content. We are self-funded. Without our sponsors, we don't do this. So we appreciate their support. We appreciate you supporting them. Saturday night, ASU basketball at home against number one in the country, Kansas. ASU has never beaten a number one team in Tempe. Of course, Kansas has a local kid in Mitch Lightfoot. There's some great angles around this game. So a lot of content up on the website. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. He is the Iron Man. Eric Sorensen is always the executive producer. Thanks to the staff. Have yourself a great day.